Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 470, Democracy Imperiled, being recorded on July 25th of the year 2004. Websites, Spitfire, www.spitfirelist.com, wfmu.org/Dave Emery, archiving the For the Record programs on streaming Real Audio, and a longer URL with the older shows also on Real Audio. That's linked to the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website, and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Spitfire website will be equipped with is equipped with detailed, annotated, article-length written descriptions of the For the Record programs. Those are up within a week or two of the airing of the program. Spitfire's website also has a search function now, and also features the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late Paul Manning for download for free. Listeners are emphatically encouraged to use both the printed files available from Spitfire and the audio files available from WFMU to create their own individual databases and repositories of information. Listeners are also emphatically encouraged to use the internet to traffic this information as far and wide as possible. Now, inside one of the program, we were taking a look at the amazing concentration of individuals and institutions involved with counting electronic votes. We also took a look at the apparent history of voting fraud that a lot of those machines, such as Diebold, apparently carry with them. And we've also taken a look at the very small number of the extent to which those very small number of individuals and institutions were associated not only with the far right, but specifically with individuals that were exponents of the covert action and dirty tricks of the 1980s, people like Oliver North and John Singlaub. What we're going to take a look in this side are some other musings on the imperiled future of democracy in the United States. Some of this will be a reprise of one of the things I talked about in For the Record 468, some of my musings on a number of very disturbing forecasts for a major earthquake in California later this year. This item of discussion, it falls in a gray area that quite admittedly lies between reality and paranoia. Exactly where remains to be seen. But unfortunately, in the Bush years, the dividing line between reality and paranoia has become very badly divided indeed. One of the things that we looked at in For the Record program number 445, and that we came back to again in For the Record 466, my discussion with former co-host Mark Ortiz, and that is the profound influence of Machiavelli on the Bush administration, as it was on people who were behind the first George Bush administration. As we get into some of my musings about what might happen later this year vis-a-vis the elections, I want to cite something, and research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This is from Machiavelli's The Prince, and again in the book American Dynasty by Kevin Phillips. Kevin Phillips closes his book with a discussion of Machiavelli's The Prince, what Machiavelli advocates in terms of lying and deception and pretense, and notes the influence of Machiavelli on the administration of both the first George Bush and the current George Bush. And Kevin Phillips himself, a mainstream conservative, muses that this bodes very, very ill for the Republic. Before getting into my fears concerning the possibility, and again, the possibility of a seismic disruption of the American elections, consider the following. Again, this is from Machiavelli's The Prince. This is from the Penguin Classics edition of that, translated by George Bull. The ISBN number is 0-14-044107-7. Now consider the influence of Machiavelli on people like Karl Rove, the brain of George Bush, as one author put it, and consider what Machiavelli advocated in order to maintain control. Quote, "Indeed, there is no surer way of keeping possession than by devastation. Whoever becomes the master of a city accustomed to freedom and does not destroy it may expect to be destroyed himself, because when there is a rebellion, such a city justifies itself by calling on the name of liberty and its ancient institutions, never forgotten despite the passing of time and the benefits received from the new ruler. Whatever the conqueror's actions or foresight, if the inhabitants are not dispersed and scattered, they will forget neither that name nor those institutions, and at first opportunity they will at once have recourse to them, as did Pisa after having been kept in servitude for 100 years by the Florentines. But in republics, there is more life, more hatred, a greater desire for revenge. The memory of their ancient liberty does not and cannot let them rest. In their case, the surest way is to wipe them out. And again, that counseled by Machiavelli in The Prince. And it is in the consideration of that particular very disturbing bit of advice from Machiavelli, and considering Machiavelli's influence on the current administration, evaluate some of the possibilities for later this fall. Now, again, what I'm about to talk about concerns, it basically is an item that falls into that gray area between reality and paranoia. The distinction between those two domains has become badly eroded in the administration of George II. And I want to preface what I'm about to say by, first of all, emphasizing that I am not predicting this will happen. I am saying that I am afraid of the possibility. I've seen some very disturbing stories in the media, specifically predictions, very specific predictions about a major earthquake later this year in California. I also want to stress that it is a matter of public record that seismic weaponry is a reality. One cannot, of course, cause slippage on an earthquake fault that does not have sufficient slippage. That is due to massive dynamics of plate tectonics that are not under human control. But where there is sufficient slippage on a fault system to produce an earthquake, it can be deliberately triggered. Nikola Tesla did this in the late 19th century in New York City, and the U.S. and the former Soviet Union had a treaty about environmental modification for the purposes of warfare. It was on the books by the mid-70s, and specifically, it talks about earthquakes as one of the environmental forms of weaponry that is prohibited by that treaty. In For the Record program number 69, I not only reproduce the text of a portion of that treaty between the U.S. and former USSR. I also relate Nikola Tesla's causing of an earthquake in New York City in the late 19th century. And I also talk about former Defense Secretary William Cohen's statement at a press conference in 1997 that terrorists were working on ways of using electromagnetic radiation to trigger earthquakes. The point being that it is a matter of public record that where there is sufficient slippage on an earthquake fault to cause a major quake, it can be deliberately triggered. With that in mind, and also bearing in mind that one of the things we've talked about in that context is Project HARP. In my many discussions with Nick Begich, those are available for download from the WFMU website. We talked about how Project HARP appeared to be one of the forms of technology that could do that. That is to say, trigger an earthquake. I have been told by people with engineering backgrounds that it doesn't take something as sophisticated as Project HARP, and that in fact that weaponry would in all probability be accessible to someone with sufficient technological knowledge and far fewer resources. Again, I don't know how easy it is to apply that type of technology, nor the degree of precision with which it can be applied, so to factor that in. But bearing in mind what Machiavelli said and what he advised in The Prince, indeed, there is no sure way of keeping possession by devastation. Whoever becomes the master of a city accustomed to freedom and does not destroy it may expect to be destroyed himself. And bearing in mind, in republics, again by from Machiavelli, in republics there is more life, more hatred, and a greater desire for revenge. The memory of their ancient liberty does not and cannot let them rest. In their case, the surest way is to wipe them out. Keep that in mind, and bear in mind also that we now have a Republican governor due to basically the deliberate destabilization of the state of California, the largest state in the union, the most electoral votes, and a Democratic bastion of sorts. Bear in mind that Arnold Schwarzenegger not only has an explicit Nazi heritage, but his elaborate and cosmetic support of the Holocaust remembrance movement, to the contrary, he has uttered himself on many occasions sympathy for Hitler and an admiration for his ability as a leader. On the Spitfire website, there is an undoctored picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger from December 7th, 1987, from Sports Illustrated, posing, giving the Nazi salute. And again, check SpitfireList.com. That is not an altered picture. I wish to hell it was. Bearing in mind that a lot of people are worried about a disruption of the elections later this year in California, an October surprise to affect the elections. Bear in mind that there's the possibility that they could always come up with a major al-Qaeda leader. In For the Record 468, we took a look at pressure by this administration on Pakistan to arrest a high-ranking al-Qaeda person, preferably around the time of the Democratic Convention. There also has been widespread speculation about either a terrorist incident or the threat of a terrorist incident in order to forestall the elections. There's actually been an explicit discussion of plans to postpone the elections in the event of a major terrorist incident, and there's been a fair amount of media equivocation about how accurate that prognostication is. Again, certainly the administration has talked about it. There have also been some denials in various media coverage. But there is a fair amount of skepticism out there. I think if Osama bin Laden suddenly turned up in U.S. hands very close to the election, it would arouse suspicion. If there is a major terrorist incident or the threat of a major terrorist incident, that might arouse suspicion as well. Bear in mind, and again I have to encapsulate this due to the limitations of time, that in my considered opinion, both the Bush administration and the Muslim Brotherhood, one of whose outcroppings is the al-Qaeda organization and related elements, both have documented connections with the Underground Reich, and I believe that both are under control of the Underground Reich. However, I would stress that neither is the epicenter of the Underground Reich. Both could be thought of as marionettes being manipulated, sort of like a Punch and Judy show, where the U.S. and the Muslim world rip each other apart to the great delight of the Underground Reich, who will inherit what is left. But if there's a major earthquake in California, it could very easily disrupt the elections. It also could, if the quake was major enough, it could lead to a declaration of martial law because there would be a collapse in the economy. It would disrupt the society profoundly, would cause a fiscal crisis because we haven't got the money to rebuild much of California. An earthquake in Northern California, a major quake, would collapse the Sacramento River levees and would salinate much of the potable water supply for the state of California. Just imagine the sixth largest republic in the world without enough drinking water. Talk about a crisis. That is a crisis. I would also note that one of the things that the Karl Rove and the Republican hardcore want to do is to energize the base. One of the major elements of the Republican electoral base is the Christian right wing, who've been very energized indeed over the issue of gay marriage. And I can very easily see the evangelical Christian community in the far right seizing upon a seismic destruction of Northern California as proof that God is smiting the fornicators and the sodomites and the users of false drugs. Indeed, with the highly visible and much covered gay marriage phenomenon in San Francisco this past year, I could see a major earthquake in California being touted by the evangelical right as, again, God's punishment upon those who have defiled the institution of marriage. Indeed, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson were saying that after September 11th. So imagine if California, if Northern California suddenly got flattened by a major quake. You can see the Christian right basically seeing this as a sign that of the intervention of the Lord on their behalf. It also would trash a major area of liberal political sentiment in the United States, and the powers that be would love to do that. And it would also disrupt the elections. Exactly what would happen, who knows? I would note in this regard, before I get into some of the very specific predictions for major earthquakes later this year in California, research credit goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Cron Watch. This, in turn, accesses information from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And this, again, falls in the gray area between reality and paranoia. This might just be characteristically tasteless humor by Governor Jeb Bush, but one wonders whether perhaps they know that something is up. And again, this is pure speculation. It should be taken with a dose of salt. And I hope this is pure BS. This is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It's from the website Cron Watch, Monday, November 17th of 2003. Again, quoting from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Governor Jeb Bush joked during a Florida cabinet meeting Wednesday that the people of San Francisco may be endangered, and quote, that's probably good news for the country, unquote. The subject was environmental land, and Bush was looking at a map showing locations with a lot of different wildlife. Quote, it looks like the people of San Francisco are an endangered species, which may not be a bad thing. That's probably good news for the country, unquote. People in the room broke into laughter. Did I just say that out loud? The governor asked. Again, this might just be tasteless humor and nothing to it. At the very least, it is, I think, revealing of some of the mindset in this administration. But I wonder, again, this falls into the gray area between reality and paranoia. I wonder, is he aware of something in the works? Note the following. I've lived in California for the record, so to speak, since 1977. I have never seen such a specific earthquake prediction as the ones I'm about to read. I talked about these in For the Record 468. This is from the Yahoo website. It's an AFP story credit, Dateline Los Angeles. It's from April 15th of this year, 2004. Headlined, Expert Warns California to Brace for Big Quake by September. A U.S. geophysicist has set the scientific world ablaze by claiming to have cracked a holy grail, earthquake prediction, and warning that a big one will soon hit Southern California. Russian-born University of California, Los Angeles professor Vladimir Kailos Borok says he can foresee major quakes by tracking minor tremors and historical patterns in seismic hotspots that could indicate more violent shaking is on the way. And he has made a chilling prediction that a quake measuring at least 6.4 magnitude on the Richter scale will hit a 31,200 square kilometer or 12,000 square mile area of Southern California by September 5th. The team at UCLA's Institute of Geophysics and Planetary Physics accurately predicted a 6.5 magnitude quake in Central California last December, as well as a 8.1 magnitude tremor that struck the Japanese island of Hokkaido in September. Skipping down. Now, they predict a major quake will hit an area that stretches across desert regions to the east of Los Angeles, home to around 9 million people, including the Mojave Desert and the resort town of Palm Springs, which lies near the notorious San Andreas Fault. Yet another prediction. From San Francisco Chronicle of January 9th of 2004, article headline, San Andreas Quakes Show Cyclical Pattern. UC Berkeley Study Finds Fault Slipping in Periodic Bursts. It's by Kay Davidson, the Chronicle science writer, again, 19204, 2004. Scientists have found striking evidence of a three-year cycle of earthquakes on the San Andreas Fault, a development that might lead to the first practical short-term earthquake forecasting in Central California. The new research, which one expert called a tour de force of geoscience, suggests that the next peak of the cycle is likely to come late this year. And note the following. This is also a review from 468. From the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, March 4th of 2004, Schwarzenegger removes National Guard commander, by Carl Nolte, reads in part, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger abruptly removed Major General Paul Monroe as commander of the California National Guard on Tuesday and replaced him with Major General Thomas Ayres, ERES, who served as director of the Guard's Office of Homeland Security. California National Guard, with 22,000 members, is the largest Guard unit in the country. Nearly 3,000 California National Guard troops are serving overseas, many of them in Iraq. His replacement, Ayres, after talking about Monroe, his replacement, Ayres, 59, takes over immediately. Ayres rose through the ranks during 35 years of service in the National Guard. In civilian life, he's senior partner in the Sacramento law firm of Nossaman, Guntner, Knox, and Elliott. He is a Republican. Monroe is a Democrat. The California National Guard has been used extensively since the 2001 terrorist attacks, assuming duties as varied as guarding the airports, patrolling the Golden Gate Bridge, and serving overseas. Of course, the California National Guard would be front and center in the event of a major disaster, such as an earthquake in California. I would also note that Schwarzenegger, although I have not got the article here, recently replaced the head of the California Highway Patrol as well. They also would be front and center in any sort of disaster response. Now, again, I'm not predicting this would happen, but it could be very interesting indeed. People will be suspicious about a terrorist incident or something like that. However, people will not be suspicious of an earthquake. That would be seen as a natural disaster, an act of God, so to speak. Be aware that such things can be triggered. And if, in fact, one happened in Northern California, was devastating, it would collapse the U.S. economy, could lead to a declaration of martial law. I would note that Portugal was a major imperial power up until the 18th century, and a gigantic earthquake destroyed the city of Lisbon in the mid-18th century and brought down Portugal. One of the things that led to the American capitalization of Japan in the 1920s and some of the cartel links between the Japanese corporations that backed fascism in that country and their American counterparts, something we talked about in For the Record 426, was the Great Kanto Earthquake of 1923. It destroyed much of Japan, and the American financiers then stepped back in and began recapitalizing Japan. A major earthquake in California would cause a fiscal crisis here and would lead foreign investors to begin occupying the U.S. with capital. So think about that. Again, I don't know how precisely this technology can be applied. A major quake in one of the desert areas of Southern California would cause a lot of damage and probably some loss of life. It could lead to a disruption of the elections. You would also then, perhaps, see the George and Arnold show. George and Arnold would ride to the rescue in a classic action film. They would ride to the rescue of California. You'd see a lot of good sound bites of George Bush looking compassionate, which he likes to do. You'd see Arnold looking compassionate and sheltering the bereaved and the stricken in his muscular arms. You might even see Schwarzenegger, who's the photo op entrepreneur in the extreme. You might even see Schwarzenegger take off his shirt and use his muscles to help move around some wreckage. Again, keep your eye on that. That would also position Schwarzenegger in the national limelight, might even set the stage for a run for office on his part. If eventually something like that took place, the elections could be delayed, and then with George and Arnold riding to the rescue of California, you might see Diebold machines used to structure the vote, if indeed Californians did not vote in favor of George Bush. Again, this is pure rumination, and one wonders. More on the imperiling of democracy in this country. Very thoughtful article appeared in originally Cigar Aficionado magazine. This is published on the Newsmax.com website. It's a conservative website. And this is an article originally, again, from Cigar Aficionado. It's called General Franks Doubts Constitution Will Survive WMD Attack. General Tommy Frank says that if the United States is hit with a weapon of mass destruction that inflicts large casualties, the Constitution will be discarded in favor of a military form of government. Franks, who successfully led the U.S. military operation to liberate Iraq, expressed his worries in an extensive interview he gave to the men's lifestyle magazine Cigar Aficionado. In the magazine's December edition, the former commander of the military's Central Command warned that if terrorists succeeded in using a weapon of mass destruction, WMD, against the U.S. or one of our allies, it would likely have catastrophic consequences for our cherished Republican form of government. Discussing the hypothetical dangers posed to the U.S. in the wake of September 11th, Frank said that, quote, the worst thing that could happen, unquote, is if terrorists acquire and then use a biological, chemical, or nuclear weapon that inflicts heavy casualties. If that happens, Frank said, quote, the Western world, the free world, loses what it cherishes most, and that is freedom and liberty we've seen for a couple of hundred years in this grand experiment that we call democracy, unquote. Franks then offered in a practical sense what he thinks would happen in the aftermath of such an attack. Quote, it means the potential of a weapon of mass destruction and a terrorist, massive, casualty-producing event somewhere in the Western world, it may be in the United States of America, that causes our population to question our own Constitution and to begin to militarize our country in order to avoid a repeat of another mass, casualty-producing event, which in fact then begins to unravel the fabric of our Constitution. Two steps, very, very important. Franks didn't speculate about how soon such an event might take place. Already, Critics of the U.S. Patriot Act rushed through Congress in the wake of the September 11th attacks have argued that the law aims to curtail civil liberties and sets a dangerous precedent. But Frank's scenario goes much further. He is the first high-ranking official to openly speculate that the Constitution could be scrapped in favor of a military form of government. And don't think that there aren't elements who would very much like to see something catastrophic happen to do just exactly that. On the website of Catherine Eureka, the author of the Eureka Report, there's a very interesting article by Paul Weyrich. Paul Weyrich is the founder of the Free Congress Foundation, also one of the generating forces behind the Council on National Policy that helped to spawn some of the electronic voting machines that we talked about on side one. And one of the things he talked about in the wake of the failure of Bill Clinton's impeachment to remove him from office was that there was, in fact, a need for reactionaries, he calls them conservatives, to basically be prepared to replace the existing institutions of society. And from the American Prospect magazine, 2 years ago, conservative Paul Weyrich stunned the religious right by calling for a retreat from temporal concerns. Quote, "Conservatives have learned to succeed in politics," he wrote in an open letter that's still available on the website www.freecongress.org, "but that did not result in the adoption of our agenda. The reason, I think, is that politics itself has failed, and politics has failed because of the collapse of the culture," unquote. And he goes on to comment, "To look at ways to separate ourselves from the institutions that have been captured by the ideology of political correctness or by other enemies of our traditional culture," unquote. In essence, he said the religious right should espouse cultural and political separatism by setting up its own schools, television networks, and even courts of law. And then skipping down, "It turns out that Weyrich and his folks, Weyrich and his folks really had in mind was less separatism than guerrilla warfare, a new traditionalist movement that, according to its manifesto, written by Weyrich protege Eric Hubeck and bearing the grandiose title The Integration of Theory and Practice, a program for the new traditionalist movement, would seek to, quote, advance a true traditionalist counterculture based on virtue, excellence, and self-discipline," unquote. "The new traditionalists, who sound a lot like the old traditionalists, will reject the materialism, hedonism, consumerism, egoism, and the cult of self-actualization which permeate modern life." Hubeck elaborates, "We will not try to reform existing institutions. We only intend to weaken and eventually destroy them." And I would suggest that this is very much like the behavior of the French power elite in the run-up to World War II. And for the record, 372, 412, and 441, among other broadcasts, I quoted from the book Triumph of Treason by Pierre Coe, the French Minister of Aviation under the Social Front of Léon Blum in the 30s, and he talks about how the French power elite deliberately subverted the French resistance in World War II, their military resistance, and caused the rapid collapse of French democracy. They welcomed the German invasion as a way of getting rid of French democracy, and don't think there aren't elements in this country that would like to do a similar thing. I'll close with an anecdote and food for thought. This is from the book The Washington Payoff by Frank N. Winterberger. The full details about the information is published by Lyle Stewart. There's this anecdote. By the way, Frank N. Winterberger was a Washington lobbyist. In January of 1968, Hayden Kirkpatrick, publisher of Racing's Bible, The Thoroughbred Record, and his wife gave a small dinner party at the Pavilion Restaurant in New York. During dinner, we all started discussing the state of national and international affairs. Hayden turned to me and said, "The trouble is, and always has been, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He got us in the Second World War on the wrong side," unquote. I was speechless. Several days later, back in Washington, I recounted this story to Mildred Leonard, for many years Jerry Ford's private secretary. Before I could add my personal reaction to Hayden's remark, Mildred looked up at me and said, "You know he's right, Mr. Winterberger," unquote. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 470, Democracy Imperiled, being recorded on July 25th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.